هرابی سچین هرابی سچین هر دو برابون گیان هر دو برابون قسمت کاری کرد قسمت کاری کرد و یک جابون گیان و یک جابون کومل 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 کم شدا حالیل ملکم گوشه ی رشتی کرد شلگم یا جیران چاوتم گیان جیران چاوتم زلفر شکت زلفر شکت بی که بدو بش بیان بی که بدو بش کامان بد بدر کامان بد بدر لجیر هاری رش بیان لجیر هاری رش کامل 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 کم شدا هاری لامل کم گوشه ی رشتی کد شلکه گیان جیران چاوتم بیان جیران چاوتم مردم گیای مال خم گیای دوسم مردم گیای مال خم گیای دوسم و چه دل خوشی و شرابوسم و چه دل خوشی گیان و شرابوسم آمین بارگانت ملنگه نه سکر برو مالکم لی مر رو خینه مردم ها نفک مردم ها نفک مالو مالداری گیان مالو مالداری منیج ها مفک منیج ها مفک عشق و دلداری گیان عشق و دلداری کومل 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 کم شدا هاری لمل کم بوشه رشتی اکد شلک گیان جیران چاوکم گیان جیران چاوکم
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to the Voices of the Middle East from KBOO 90.7 FM. The next part of the program, we will be continue our interview with Dr. Robert Olson, professor of Middle East history and from University of Kentucky. And I will open the phone lines for listeners who may have questions. The number here is 503-231-8187. If you have any question for Dr. Olson, please give us a call. And before I actually I missed a phone call. Please keep calling because I'm in the A room and I'm doing engineering myself. So let's go to one more questions.
Oh, by the way, Gudars, Mr. Gudari, sure. I do have a new book that just came out in February. It's called, some of your listeners might be interested in it, it's called Turkey-Iranian Relations, 1979 to 2004. I finished writing it last July, and it's called Revolution, Ideology, War, Coups, and Geopolitics. And the last three chapters deal with the war in Iraq and the reasons for the war and the response of Turkey and Iran, insofar as I could determine it at that time.
Well, thank you for...
It's on Amazon.com.
Yeah, thank you for announcing it. I didn't know about that one. Looks like our communication is somehow weakened, too.
I'll send you a copy.
Sure, thank you. Let's go back to the situation in Iraq. Again, I have a general question. the emergency situation and the law that was passed just a couple of days ago by interim government. How do you feel that would really play out with all the insurgencies and this claim of democracy and what is happening there with regards to different factions, especially Sunni and Shiites in Iraq?
Well, I don't think the United States is particularly interested in bringing democracy to Iraq. It would be fine if it arrived somehow, but I don't think that's one of the major United States objectives. The United States objective now is to reduce its presence, to reduce its profile in Iraq, and they're trying to bring in the United Nations. They're trying to bring in NATO. As you know, on the 28th and 29th of June, there was a big NATO conference or summit in Istanbul. And one of the conclusions of that conference would be that NATO would help train some soldiers and security people to go to Iraq. That is, countries of NATO. They won't be underneath the NATO flag or the NATO aegis, but they will be there. So you can see that the United States is allowing NATO and the United Nations to come in more. And this, of course, is to aid President Bush's presidential campaign, because Iraq is going to be the major issue in the presidential campaign. So the United States, especially the Republican Party and the Bush presidency, they are trying to lessen the consequences, the flak, if you will, from the war in Iraq, which is becoming more and more unpopular. So I think the turnover of that government was done very quickly. It was done very expeditiously with the American presidential election in mind. So it really puts this interim government into kind of a bind, and I think they're going to have a lot of difficulty. Right away, as you know, they declared martial law, very stringent laws, which means no trials. You can nab people. They have no right to due process, almost the same as the Saddam Hussein regime. So the only thing is, the United States is putting so much money into Iraq, so many billions of dollars into the security, the mercenaries, the hired soldiers, and so forth, that they can simply wear down this resistance. The more and more, for example, help they give to the interim government, the more and more mercenaries that they hire. And remember, the United States gives $1,000, $10,000, $20,000 to informants for anyone that they know may be operating an insurgency, so that they can kill them. And so they have $25 million one on Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. So, over a period of time, it's very difficult, even for the strong resistance that you have in Iraq, as multifaceted as it may be, to withstand. I mean, there's 200,000 soldiers in Iraq almost, and then there's all the, including the mercenary soldiers, and you have hit squads and death squads and snipers and so forth. And so it's very difficult for this resistance to increase, and now they want to have Iraqis fight Iraqis is what you're going to have, and if it does fail, of which there's a possibility, they'll say, well, it's the Iraqis' fault. We gave them their opportunity, and they couldn't do it. So everything is done to kind of save the face of the United States and the Bush administration, really.
What you mentioned about the fight between Iraqis and Iraqis is alarming, because I guess this week there were some footage on national networks about a group of Iraqis that were basically asking Zarqawi to leave Iraq, otherwise it will be they looked the same as Al-Qaeda people. You're absolutely right that there is some effort to create a civil war, so to speak, within Iraq, between Iraqis, and trying to either use mercenaries to shut down the insurgency or resistance or whatever.
Absolutely, I think you're absolutely right, and that's a very good point. And we all have learned enough over the past year and a half to not believe anything that we hear in the news right away. You don't know who is behind this. For example, the interim government, the United States Security Services, Intelligence Services, for example, may be sponsoring this group to make it look like it's an indigenous Iraqi a challenge, if you will, resistance to any of what they describe as terrorism, especially Mousab al-Zarqawi. So whether it's a bona fide group or whether it's something that's been fostered by the interim Iraqi government, United States intelligence, who doesn't know? I rather suspect it's the latter myself, to tell you the truth, because it's so important to have this resistance subdued. So the United States and the interim Iraqi government are willing to go to any lengths to achieve this, I think, because so much is at stake. That is the American presidency, which is more important than as far as the United States is concerned than Iraq.
And especially, I guess, the background of Iyad Alavi, the CIA operatives. So it gives him a very good experience in intelligence and in steering up this kind of operation. So.
Right. I think one of the things that, you know, I've been reading a lot on the Internet, not that I believe it all, but some has been by a very respected person out in California who is an Iraqi himself. He's studying theology and philosophy. And if you can believe it, the National Accord after 1992, which Alawi started, which is composed mostly of Baathists and ex-military officers, they carried out terrorist acts themselves throughout Iraq. You know, they tried to blow up buildings, assassinate people, kill people, maybe Saddam Hussein himself. So he's not a very savory character, that's for sure.
One more time, I want to repeat the phone number here. It's 503-231-8187. That's the air room. If you have any question for Dr. Olson, please be a little consistent and and dial the number.
Everybody has to be interested in this.
Yeah, one of the problem of, I guess, my shows is that usually... I mean, issues are so in detail and kind of it requires a certain level of expertise to know the problems of the region that so it's more educational for most of the listeners, I hope. And that's why, I mean, it's not easy to find someone like Bob to talk to, somebody who knows the things in academic level from the bottom up.
Well, you got a wonderful show, that's for sure.
Thank you very much. One thing that I really have been noticing recently is that one of the issues that, like with Michael Moore film and other programs, especially from the left, is that they try to show that, for example, the problem is Saudi Arabia, or the problem are different Arabs or different Muslims. They don't really deal with the problem of what is U.S.'s role in the Middle East.
That's right.
And so they try to kind of change the attention from Iraq to another country, as if, like, attacking Saudi Arabia is a good action as opposed to attacking Iraq. Yeah. What is your opinion on how left and the liberal movement really deal with this problem of war and peace?
Well, I think, first of all, you seldom hear anyone commenting upon what were the reasons for the war. For example, if the Bush administration was putting out false information that it was not weapons of mass destruction, that it was not particularly the Baathist regime, then one has to ask, what were the real reasons for the war? And I
unfortunately, I dropped Dr. Olson, so we'll try again. Page 59. 859-224-0391. My apologies. Now we have Dr. Olson back again.
Well, we should talk. So those are the major reasons for the war. And then what Michael Moore's film does, I think, is that they distort things by saying, some people left the movie whom I was with and said, well, we almost must attack Saudi Arabia. But Al-Qaeda, for it started, like Osama bin Laden, to get rid of the Saudi dynasty. They really wanted to get rid of the Saudi dynasty. When they realized they couldn't do it, and the Saudis and the American intelligence and so forth pushed them out into the Sudan, and then they compelled the Sudan to force them to leave to Afghanistan, it's at that point, it seems, that Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda decided that they should attack the United States. Whether or not it had the consequences that it has had, whether they knew that or not, I don't know. But certainly, the Saudi dynasty is one of the objects of them, rather than being cooperative with them. So the Saudis themselves are quite scared. You know, some of the neoconservatives in the United States, especially the neoconservatives who support Israel, that are the various pro-Israeli groups, they want to topple the Saudi dynasty because they think the Saudi dynasty was undemocratic. It's anti-West, it's anti-Christian, it's anti-Israel, it's anti-Jewish. And so there is a lot of support from these groups and also some Christian groups in the United States to topple the Saudi dynasty. But I don't think that's the American government's position, because the Saudi dynasty brings some stability to the largest oil producer in the world, very much to the benefit of the Western economy, very much benefit to the American International Oil Company. So there's very much a difference between the policy that many in the United States government are following and those who, of course, would like to see the Saudi dynasty fall. And then they say as a result of that, along with the invasion of Iraq, that this will bring democracy to the Middle East. But this seems highly unlikely and highly improbable.
We have a listener who called in. You're on the air, listen.
Okay, yeah, hi. Earlier in the hour, you had mentioned that you felt that the U.S. would be ruling Iraq for 10 years, kind of at a minimum.
Yes.
Now, given that if the Bush administration somehow stays in power, realistically, and even if the administration does change, there's going to continue to be increasing popular support to withdraw troops and lessen the amount of troops over there. So as we potentially withdraw military force, and because the U.S. and the Iraqi government will always want to say that it's the Iraqis making the decisions,
mm-hmm.
can you offer some things to be on the lookout for, aside from it being blatant that the U.S. either made the decision for the Iraqis and they announced it, or it's being done by straight U.S. military force?
Well, it's done by straight U.S. military force, but what the United States wants to do is to build up the Iraqi army, the Iraqi security services, the Iraqi intelligence services, so that they can take care of any kind of challenge, whether it's insurgency, militancy, terror, or whatever they want to talk, whatever they want to call it.
And you feel they would remain loyal to their training from the U.S. as opposed to develop, you know, kind of, I guess, their own internal culture and loyalties amongst themselves.
Exactly.
Okay.
And one of the difficulties with this is, though, will the Alawi government have some legitimacy within mm-hmm. the eyes of sufficient number of Iraqi people, even with the force that they're going to be using with their new security forces, to be able to do this? That is, the Alawi government is going to have some kind of legitimacy before that it's going to have the trust of all of the security people and the army which it's training. And given the differences that we talked about earlier between the Sunni and the Shia and the Kurds, this is going to be very difficult to do, because as they do this, the Kurds are going to keep reinforcing their control over the territories which they hold. The Shia are going to want to continue to consolidate their power, so they're not going to be too cooperative with this Alawi government, this American-backed government, if they think in the end that's going to be detrimental to their political issues, especially the Shia in Iraq. So it's going to. I cannot see any kind of outcome in the near future except a very strong American presence. They would like to do it as much as they could behind the scenes, but I think there's going to be a lot of military up front in Iraq for a long time.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
We have another caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Yes.
Please go ahead.
Please go ahead.
Yes, I just want to let you know, this is one listener who really appreciates your analysis. It's your show here. Hello?
Well, thank you.
Yeah, we got a background deal. I'm still on, it sounds like.
Yeah, go ahead.
I appreciate your analysis.
There's some kind of noise.
And wondering if you could comment on Palestinian-Israeli politics and how that affects and crosses over to Iraq, please. Thank you. I'll take my question off the air.
Yeah. Gudars, it's hard for me to hear because, on the Palestinian issue. Well, the Palestinian issue, of course, is vitally important to the whole Middle East. The United States has done very little about it the last 3 years. In Istanbul at the NATO conference, nothing was done about it. Most scholars of the Middle East think that a good deal of the anti-Americanism or the unhappiness with the United States or even the hatred of the United States in the Arab world and the Muslim world is because of the injustice which has been done to the Palestinians. That is, the Palestinians are being dispossessed of their land. They're being ethnically cleansed. Israel is building a wall which takes in one of the huge aquifers in the West Bank. You know, there are two huge aquifers in the West Bank. One of them is in the around Qalqilya up in the north, which the Israeli wall that they're building encompasses that. Plus, it's a very fertile area agriculturally. So the Palestinians are being put into these Palestinian stands, into enclaves, on reservations, if you will. And so this is going to be a continuing problem. But the United States, since Europe can't do much about it, they think that that Israel, because of its great force and its military prowess, and that it will be able to manage, you know, these crises through this intermittent low warfare that is going on. So that is going to continue. And I don't know how. I myself don't know how the Israel or the United States thinks that they're going to be able to control 2.5 million Palestinians in the West Bank and 1.3 million in the Gaza Strip through this constant military force. If they're expelled over to Jordan, then you would destabilize Jordan. So the only thing is to control them through kind of a very massive military and political force. In turn, this will make Arabs and Muslims very unhappy, and it will increase, terrorism. So unless this Palestinian-Israel issue is dealt with, I think that I think it's going to be very threatening. You know, one thing about this democracy business, this greater Middle Eastern project or this wider Middle Eastern project that they have, is because 50% of the youth, let's just think of the Arab world without talking about, you know, Iran or Malaysia, is between 18 and under 18 years of age. You have 30 to 40% unemployment in many places. Obviously, these people, for pride and respect and their own dignity, are going to turn to violence. So they're hoping through this occupation, which they call democracy, that this will improve the economy. But unless Europe and the United States engage in building industry throughout the Arab world, including Afghanistan and Pakistan, they're not going to be able to solve the problem. And I don't see any effort for them to do so. What they want to do is to have strong governments, authoritarian governments, that are loyal to the United States. Like, for example, that's why Iraq under Saddam Hussein had to go. They don't want the Ba'athist government in Syria. They'd like to get rid of the Iranian government because, well, however much these governments are liked or disliked by their populaces, they control their own economies. And United States and Europe as well don't like that. They want to be able to have capital to penetrate into these areas. In an odd way, they want to use the oil from the Arab countries and from Iran, and then they will recycle it back to these countries for infrastructure, or in the case of the United States, through military occupation. But most of the profits from the many of the profits of the oil go to international oil companies or to European American companies, and even the rebuilding of these countries is Mr. Iqtidari and I just talked about. 80% of this is also going to go back to the United States. So I'm not very optimistic that even military actions are going to ameliorate or make better the situation in the Middle East. And so I'm rather pessimistic.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Olson. Unfortunately, we passed the 7 hour, and we have to end the program tonight. Although
you're going to have a 2 hour program,
exactly, and I'm asking you to come back again, maybe for the next show, and we can have a more detailed discussion about this greater Middle East plan.
Well, thank you very much for your questions.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you very much for being with us today, and. With that, I just have to make a couple announcements. On 28th of July, Mark Gazirovsky, who just recently published a book on Dr. Mossadegh and the coup d'etat in Iran 1953, will be interviewed on KBOO at 10 o'clock. It's Wednesday, 28th of July. And he will be speaking at Portland State University on July 31st. At Iran Forum, which is adjacent to Iranian Festival, Portland State University campus, Park Blocks, and Dr. Gazirovsky's speak will be at Shattuck Hall 212 at the afternoon of July 31st. We will have another show on July 29th, and I will be speaking about the details of the program. Let me also tell you that there is going to be a conference on media and the war and peace at Portland State University. This is a conflict resolution program conference this coming Monday, July 12th. And quite a few people from KBOO, including Robert Jefferson and myself, will be speaking there. It's an all-day conference at Portland State. With that... I guess we end the show tonight and wish everybody a very happy evening.
Good night.
Good night.